Welcome, members. The Transportation Policy and Finance Committee will come to order. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes of February 25th?
So moved.
Representative Petersburg moves the minutes of February 25th. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Those minutes are approved. Members, today we'll be hearing from the county, cities, and townships, and then we will have approximately 45 minutes for that, and we will hear our four bills, and that will be the agenda today. So those speaking on behalf of the counties, townships, please come to the testifiers table.
All right, well, maybe I can get started while we're figuring out technology here. I think you should all have a copy of my presentation in your folder.
Great. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Breidach. If you could state your name for the committee record, and then you can proceed as you see.
My name is Abby Breidach. I am with the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC is a membership organization that represents all 87 counties in the state. And so anyway, thank you for the time today. And I'd like to give you an overview here of the county transportation systems, some of our needs, and some of the things we're working on this year. So let's see. So here we have sort of a breakout, and this is kind of a good intro for all of the presentations we're going to have today. Sort of a breakdown of our Minnesota's road systems. We have the U.S. interstates and the trunk highways, county state aid highways, county roads, the cities, and the townships. If you look over to the right side, you'll see in the red the total local share of our roads, which is almost 90% of our system, which I think is kind of a surprise to a lot of people that vast majority of our the roads in our state are local. And then we also give that number in VMT, which is vehicle miles traveled. So 40% of the trips on roads are done on those local roads. And then it's broken down further to the county share, which is about a third of the system and a quarter of the miles traveled. Matt Burris went through an excellent presentation for you all a few weeks ago about the makeup of our highway funds. And I'm just mentioning this again so I can remind you sort of where we fit in. Within the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, there's a formula that breaks out how all the money funnels through. And the counties, as you can see highlighted there, receives 29% of the 95% distribution. So once, you know, we get that money into the fund, it still's got to filter through, and I speak a little bit in a few more slides later about kind of the scale. So counties have two different road systems. One is the county state aid highway system, the CASA system. That's about 67% of our total county mileage, and these are the roads that are deemed regionally significant enough to merit a state wide investment. So these are the roads that we get gas tax money for, basically. And then we have our county road system, and those do not get any state funds, and that's about a third of the mileage, and those are managed and funded completely at the local level. So once we get that funding through our 29%, it goes through the CASA fund. There's an allocation formula. I'm not going to go too far into this. I'd be happy to talk to you all, anyone, one-on-one about our formulas, because they do. People have a lot of opinions on them, how they should work, how they have worked, and what it means for their area. But basically, we've got two formulas, and those formulas are based on a combination of factors, which include needs, lane miles, equalization, meaning just a kind of a cut across the board so everyone can set up a highway shop and pay for an engineer, and then vehicle registrations, which also reflects population. So it's a combination of all those factors. The roads which do not receive state aid funds, those county roads, are financed through property taxes, assessments, and now we've got a couple new tools that are gaining popularity, which are the local options, including the wheelage tax and the local options sales tax. The Greater Minnesota Local Options Sales Tax is something that has increased in its implementation a lot since 2013, when we removed the referendum requirement for the tax and gave it left it to county board approval. So that option is up to half of 1% on retail sales within the county, and it has to be used for a specific transportation project. Can also be used for transit capital expenditures and operating. County board approves it. And 11 counties have adopted it so far, and you can see them there listed at the bottom of that page. And I should just mention, this has been an incredible tool for the counties who can benefit from them, which in our counties that have a lot of retail or a lot of population to sort of drive their retail base. But, you know, some counties have actually been able to almost double their highway program implementing this structure. But again, remember that this is for those pure county roads that don't get any state funding, or for local matches for our CASA projects. Then we have the wheelage tax, which is a little bit more popular. It's a $10 charge on vehicles housed in the county. It's not, some people think it's per wheel. It's actually just per vehicle. It's collected with annual tab fees, and it's used for local roads or CASA matches. This is by county board approval, and the reason I kind of go through it a little further is also in 2013 we expanded the use of this to Greater Minnesota. It was limited to just the metro counties. 46 counties have now adopted the local option or the wheelage tax. Counties also have to do with a bit to do with transit, and I'll tell you, when I first started learning about county transportation, I was confused about. Kind of couldn't wrap my head about what do counties do with transit, and there's a reason for that. It's because it's really not the same all around the state. Excuse me. Transit is provided by local government in the Twin Cities metro area, of course, with the Met Council and with CTIB, the County's Transit Improvement Board, and the suburban providers. But in Greater Minnesota, it just varies a lot according. Sometimes there are regional transit systems. Some transit is more focused on, say, the Health and Human Services area. It could be under that department of a county. It could be under the county engineer, or they could be under the administration of the county. So there really isn't a one-size-fit-all description of how, especially Greater Minnesota Transit works. So sometimes we have a harder time sort of capturing what the needs are of those systems. But that's the reason why. As you know, the source of the metro area transit funding is that quarter cent sales tax, and it's administered through the CTIP. And I know you're all aware of a lot of the dynamics with this, and there's some proposals this year to change some of the funding levels and the way that's collected. But I just mentioned that here since it is managed, since that system is managed by counties right now. So moving on to needs, counties have identified an annual funding gap of $450 million for the CASA system, and this number was arrived at through the TFAC meeting process. We had several representatives on this, and we based this number on a variety of factors. It was on deficient bridges, identifying strategic safety improvements. TED requests the Transportation Economic Development Program that's run through DEED, an estimate of what it would cost to build out our 10-10 road system. Many of you may know we claim that we have certain amount of roads that can carry a 10-ton weight, but it's actually not true. A lot of them aren't posted, even though they can't hold 10 tons. So to build that out, so we truly have that system, there's a cost to it. And then we also took into account the local road improvement funding request of that year. And I want to be direct with you. You know, I think there's been some questions about how these numbers were arrived at. But myself, I and Margaret Donahoe were in the room when we came up, with MnDOT with this needs numbers. And I assure you that the numbers were not increased for any political reasons that day. In fact, we were actually encouraged to reduce our numbers because, I mean, as you well know, they're just a little bit hard to digest. You know, for folks who haven't been really involved in transportation, they're often really astounded by the magnitude. But transportation is a very capital-intensive industry, and so people get intimidated by the numbers. But I can assure you that this is not a big wish list, and this is not an inflated need number. So just to give you a sense of scale, MnDOT says that they've got a $6 billion gap over 10 years for the state system. And so if you would, do the math, that would equal about, for this county, since we said $450 million a year, that would be $4.5 billion for 10 years. The gross receipts proposal that for 6.5% would bring in about $160 million per year in the annual funding for counties, which, would get to about 30% of the need. Again, just I say this to exemplify what the scale is of our needs gap. And then just to give you an example, again, the increase, we've got some runs from what the increase per year would be with the 6.5% gross receipts and the tab fee increase that's been proposed. I use those mechanisms or those metrics just because that's the runs that we've already done. And so these are counties that some of you committee members represent, and I thought it may be interesting, again, for you to see. That number seems so huge, but once you put it through trust fund and then through the CASAF formulas and you actually get the number per county, these are the numbers per million that you come out with. And then to further exemplify what the scale is, a mile of road reconstruction could be anywhere from 500,000 to 1.5 million, depending on if there's a city street, curb, and gutter. So you have to put in a substantial investment for it to trickle down and make some meaningful changes at the local level. Things we're working on this session, gas tax reform, as you know, in the form of the gross receipts tax. It's interesting, back in the day, it was common for the legislature to throw a few cents a gas tax every few years. And it was always the initiative, was taught it was a really rural Republican initiative. That's what, the rural folks wanted. But it's kind of become out of favor, of course, to raising taxes has become more political. And so that's why we have this huge, huge gap, because we stopped throwing an increase in the pot every few years to keep up with inflation and costs. So we think this reform piece would get us back on track with that. And so that's why we advocate for it. We're also advocating for new funding this year, which you are aware of, to get at that gap that we've identified. I also wanted to mention some efficiencies that we're working on. One way that we know we can especially be efficient with our transportation funding is to get on the road to long-term funding. I have a list here of ways that helps. It helps us bundle projects for cost savings. We can plan for the lowest cost fix at the optimum time rather than high cost when it's available. There are some, I've seen some real interesting, quote unquote, interesting to me at least, presentations on preventative pavement maintenance. It's pretty amazing if you can plan ahead and do maintenance at the right time. You can really extend the life of a road. Just like with preventative health, preventative anything, it makes things last longer. And you can also plan how to most effectively spend your money that way. Stable construction workload for contractors equals overall lower construction costs. And you know, and project development costs increased dramatically by projects that need to be done with accelerated schedules. And those accelerated schedules come with, when we put bonding dollars in there, cash infusions, the Corridors of Commerce program. These are all good programs, but there's always an accelerated timeline for those because you've got to get them, out the door usually within 2 years. And that makes projects cost a lot more when we've got to, adhere to that accelerated schedule. Another initiative that we're working on this year is to streamline the business process of procuring permits. And we're going to hear one of those bills on Wednesday that Representative Fabian is caring for us. But we have been studying this issue for several years with the permitting agencies, and we've got some ideas on how we can save costs in this area, too. So we're looking forward to working on some of those. And that's all I have for you. I want to be mindful of the time. I don't know if you want to do questions at the end or now. Or
we can do questions right now, Ms. Bredick. Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I was looking at the needs slide, and I guess my question is if we do $450 million for 10 years for the $4.5 billion, what gets taken off the plate then? Are all the deficient bridges taken care of? Are the 1010 road system, is that completed? Have we built that out? What of these in 10 years can we knock off the list and not have to worry about again?
Mr. Chair, thank you for the question. And we interpret that if we had this kind of infusion, we could address these issues directly, and they would be
Representative Howe.
Taken care of.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then what would be our annual requirement after the 10-year infusion of the $4.5 billion?
The need? I think right. I don't think I could answer that question for you today. I mean, I think we'd have to sort of assess, because we, you know, kind of have our list completed at, you know, what we have today versus what we have in 10 years may be different. But I can try to get a number for you, an idea of that. Sorry, I don't have that.
Ms. Bredick, I'm a little confused, because what Representative Howe is asking, even with that infusion, you said that's only about 30% of the need, because you're only going to get $1.6 billion. You think that you'll be able to complete everything with 30% of the revenue.
No, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. That 30% need is meant to compare to, you know, how much we'd actually get with the 6.5% gross receipts tax. Just meant to explain, to show that even though that seems like an enormous number, it still only gets us at 30% of what we would need to complete that list. That makes sense. Sorry, that is a little bit interesting.
Okay. Representative Joskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Ms. Bredick. You mentioned just almost tangentially in going through your presentation about rural transit. But then go on to talk about the needs being $450 million for the CASA system, and then back to the discussion that the Chair and Representative Howe were talking with you about earlier about roads and bridges, which I think is that is the need in rural Minnesota. Where is the amount of need expressed for rural transit in the work that you've done?
Ms. Bredick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have that number. I think that the best source for that would be the Public Transit Association. But because so many different entities are in charge of providing rural transport, Greater Minnesota Transit, it's hard to kind of, I couldn't get that number from the counties and then say it was the right number. So I can work with them to try to find a good number for you, but I don't know that today.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Joskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Bredick. So, you know, it just seems that we have everything from soup to nuts going on in terms of rural transit. My district's as rural as any other rural district, and I don't see people clamoring for rural transit in our part of the state. They want the roads and bridges fixed, and that's where they want the money invested. And as I mentioned earlier, in an earlier committee meeting, the place we need transit help is for the disabled and the nursing home folks. And I've talked to them in the last week, and the rural transit people in our counties are not even talking to them. So they are using money from their own budgets, and there's no discussion about actually using the rural transit monies that are getting shoveled out there for what I see as really the only need in our rural area in terms of rural transit. So it's a little perplexing. I would encourage the counties to take a look at that and, number one, identify and distill your needs down to what are real needs. And then secondly, those dollars that are already going out there for rural transit, they need to talk to those folks because it's apparently not happening. And more of a comment than a question. Thank you for coming today.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure that it's clear that that needs number that I mentioned was for roads and bridges. It wasn't for the transit. I don't know if you had that understanding, but it's just for the roads.
Thank you. Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Ms. Bryant, a question for you. You say on page 8 that AMC is a lead in the effort to secure new funding sources, and I've heard a lot lately about different funding sources, and Commissioner Zelli was here not too long ago and talked about the governor's new half-cent tax imposition that will hit my county of Carver, and Commissioner Zelli said that there was going to be no direct benefit for Carver out of that. And I'm just curious, you've got $2.5 million coming out of a 6.5% gross receipts tax, and you're advocating for more funding. Are you in favor of or opposed to the half-cent gas tax or the half-cent tax imposed on Carver County not going to serve Carver County? I'm just trying to figure out where your advocacy lies.
Ms. Breidig.
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair. AMC doesn't get specific about how much maybe the metro sales tax should be increased or where it should be applied. We tend to try to state issues that are statewide, especially if our members have differing opinions about that, which of course they do in the metro area. But we do support, we have a general statement saying that we support a multimodal approach to transportation funding that would include an increase to the sales metro sales tax in the metro, but that's as specific as we get.
Mr. Chair, quick follow-up.
Representative Nash.
Chair, thank you. Ms. Breidig, so are you advocating on behalf of Carver County's transportation needs, and do you see a bit of a kind of a conflict, as it were, as to this new tax imposition being taken from the residents of Carver County and being used somewhere else?
Ms. Breidig.
Mr. Chair. Yes, I mean, I see the challenge there, which is why we really just, we don't try to take specific positions on those sorts of things. You know, there could be a request for, you know, a half-cent metro sales tax increase that didn't include Carver and Scott, and if that was the agreed-upon sort of proposal going forward, we would support that, too. I mean, we really want the local districts there to figure out, to decide what they want for themselves.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question for the testifier is in regards to, let's see, what slide is it here? It's on page 8, but I think it might be the same slide that Representative Nash was referencing, the funding positions. Mm-hmm. So in the second line there, new funding, it says AMC is a lead in the effort to secure new, sustainable, multimodal, dedicated, and balanced transportation funding. So in particular, the word sustainable there, I am wondering if AMC has a position to achieve greater sustainable, in particular to rail, passenger rail, commuter rail. Do you have a position to raise the passenger fees in order for those modes of transit to become more sustainable?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, we don't have a specific proposal that would even speak to, you know, so that level of detail about, you know, that funding that source. I mean, I think, like I said, we will leave it up to the regions who sort of manage those systems to decide what the best way to move forward is, and then if it makes sense for as a statewide organization to support that, then we would.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Braddock. Question for you in regards to the identified annual funding gap. You mentioned that was $450 million a year for the CASA system. Is that for just the CASA system? Because you have about a third of your miles that are not part of that county state aid system.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, Representative, that is just, yes, that's just for the CASA system. The pure county road need has been identified to be about the same, but you know, that system is a little bit harder to nail down, generally speaking. It really varies county to county. We have to depend on, you know, asking each individual county about their specific systems. But yes, that's a separate number.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. And with a follow-up, that means that we have quite a lot out there, because we haven't even talked about almost double the amount of roads in municipalities and townships roads, which are about 55% of all the roads in the state, too. But the question that I also come down to is in regards to just budgeting and how we determine that. Oftentimes, in the course of developing budgets over years, prioritize based upon what we think the needs are at certain times, and we then allow something else to kind of wind itself down, and then all of a sudden we realize that there's a shortcoming there. Has there been any talk or thought about what we might reprioritize from what we're currently existing paying for and doing as a county to be able to put back into roads and bridges for the times in which we've made the other decision? I mean, it seems to make sense that we would realign our evaluations rather than just saying, you know, what we've done in the past over here that we prioritized, that's okay, now we need more funding here, and sometimes the dollar just doesn't stretch that far. So I was just curious if you have discussed with other counties other areas of infusing dollars through either savings or reallocating of funding rather than just new funding.
Right.
Sure, Mr. Chair, and Representative Petersburg. So I want to make sure I understand. You're asking, you know, basically have counties looked at reprioritizing their current budgets to make investments in transportation rather than other areas. I think that counties do that as much as they can every year. I mean, the majority, our budgets are really based on what the state tells us we need to do, you know, for health and human services, you know, and other sort of areas. So, you know, when we need more money, if we can't meet the expectations that we've got upon us, we raise our levy. We have a levy increase. And, you know, as many of you know who have worked at county level, been county commissioners, I mean, that's sort of your bellwether. You know, you're an elected representative, and raising your levies is a big deal. So that isn't taken lightly, and I would say a lot of counties, that has been a major reason they have increased levies in past few years, because they just don't have the dollars to shift around. And not only that, but as I spoke about the scale, it's sort of the magnitude. We're talking, I mean, the magnitude of the needs and what it costs to get projects done, they're just huge, and you just can't find it within, you know, their existing budgets, unfortunately.
Just one last follow-up.
Just quick follow-up, I certainly understand that. And the thing is that we didn't get into the situation overnight, and to expect us to be able to get in out of it overnight means that we still have to prioritize. And so I hope that you will continue working on finding those reallocations. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Breidick. And in lieu of all those questions, I think we do need to move on with the League of Minnesota Cities. And Ms. Donahoe, I apologize, but if we've got time after 1:30, we'll come back to that. Thank you. Ms. Finn. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the committee record.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Ann Finn. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. Thank you very much for having this hearing today. Just briefly, for those who may be new to the committee or the legislature, the League is a statewide organization that serves 832 of Minnesota's 852 cities. We also have affiliations with subgroups such as Metro Cities, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and the Small Cities Association. So we have common members with those other organizations, but the League is the umbrella organization. Our smallest member is the city of Funkley in Beltrami County with a population of 5. And our largest member is the city of Forest of Minneapolis with a population over 400,000. In addition to the services that we offer to our members, we also operate an insurance trust. So just a little bit about Minnesota's 852 cities. 139 are in the 7-county metro. Of the 713 cities in greater Minnesota, only 36 of those have a population over 10,000. You can see there from the slide that most cities in our state have a population below 1,000. And I point this out to you because we are trying to meet the diverse needs of a lot of different cities throughout the state. And the League lobbies on issues that are generally of common concern to our members. I want to touch just on airports briefly because that's something that a lot of cities in our state operate. And then I'll move into our road and bridge needs. In Minnesota, there are 135 publicly owned airports. You're probably mostly familiar with the MST and the 6 reliever airports in the metro area, but there are another 129 airports that exist in greater Minnesota, and they're typically owned by a city. The State Airports Fund is the primary state funding source for these airports, and it comes from dedicated taxes on aviation fuel, aircraft registration, and airline flight property. The money is appropriated to MnDOT, who then disperses it back to the local units of government. And this one of the reasons I wanted to bring up this fund is because it has been diverted in recent years on multiple occasions to help with the state's general fund. It most recently has been repaid, but during the time when it had been diverted, we were hearing from our city officials that they were deferring maintenance on some of their in their airport facilities. I'll spend the remainder of my presentation today talking about city streets. So the municipal streets make up about 16% of the roadways in Minnesota. And these are generally collector streets and residential streets. And the design of these and the condition of them is essential to quality of life in our communities. One thing we've learned from spending a lot of time with our engineers is that maintenance is really critical. For every $1 that a road authority spends on maintaining a pavement, they can save $7 in repairs. So last spring when we were talking about potholes, potholes, that condition is the worst probably indicator of the life cycle of the road ending. And that's where the bang for the buck is the least when the road authority has to spend money. This is a chart that somebody gave me about 15 years ago when I started working on transportation, and I use it as often as I can because I think it really illustrates what happens during the life cycle of a road. And this is, I think, explains very well the need for maintenance at the proper time. When the maintenance is done on schedule, it prolongs the life of the roadway for a very long time versus letting it go, letting cracks go unsealed and things like that, which create a situation where the roadway deteriorates at a very rapid pace. We also deal with new construction. Sometimes in our cities that are growing, we build new subdivisions or developments, and sometimes we invest money in transportation infrastructure to attract economic investments. As you heard from Ms. Bryduck, the cost of a new mile of road is about $1 million. I think you can certainly do it for less, but the rule of thumb with the engineering community is about $1 million per mile. The city street system is divided into two different systems, And you heard from Ms. Bryduck that the county system is similar that way, where they have their county state aid roads and their county roads. Similarly, some municipalities have municipal state aid streets, and then they have their city street system. Here's those numbers that you're going to keep seeing. The constitutional distribution of funds. You see the red triangle there is what cities get, and I should preface that by saying cities over 5,000 population get 9% after the first or of the 95% for municipal state aid streets. Within those cities of 5,000 or more that get municipal state aid, they cannot spend the money on more than 20% of their streets. So there are a lot of shortcomings in our opinion about the municipal state aid system. Currently, only 147 cities are eligible, meaning that's the number of cities that have reached that 5,000 population threshold. And in cities where they get MSA, they're not getting to that 20% threshold. They're getting to about 16%. They're also spending a lot of their municipal state aid on county and state projects when they're participating in cost share. So the bottom line with municipal state aid is that not enough cities are eligible to receive it, and also that property taxes are supplementing municipal state aid streets. So let's talk about the remainder of that system. The 84% of city streets that are funded exclusively through property taxes and local government aid and special assessments. Cities are dealing with a lot of challenges in this part of the system. They are dealing with competing factors within their budgets. Special assessments have become increasingly difficult to administer, and there are a couple reasons for that. One being that they're wildly unpopular. If you've ever been to a city council meeting where special assessments were discussed, people want to run out of their screening. And besides that, there's a benefit test that goes with special assessments so that the road authority has to prove that the amount paid by the property owner actually is at least the amount that the property is improved. So as the housing market has become more volatile, we know it's recovering now, but there was a period of time where that benefit test was nearly impossible. The other problem with our city street funding challenges is that tax-exempt properties don't pay unless they're specially assessed. So while some of our tax-exempt properties are trip generators in our communities, they don't pay the same as other property taxpayers when it comes to funding the infrastructure that they rely on. The other problem is that maintenance is, of course, more affordable when you do it at the right time, but that's not always when it's a priority for the city council. This is just a slide showing you what kind of funding is being used right now in terms of city budgets being spent on streets. It's about 15% for street maintenance and repair, and then another 3.9% of their budgets for construction and improvement of city streets. So our municipal street system is aging. We know that a lot of these streets were built at the same time. In some communities, the development happened rapidly. The system was all built, and now it's all aging. We know that existing funding is not getting the job done for our cities. Eligibility for municipal state aid is very unlikely, given that many cities are not going to reach that 5,000 threshold. And even if they did, it would just be cutting a small piece of pie into more pieces. So also we know that special assessments and property taxes are not likely to become more popular. If we don't do anything, the deterioration will accelerate, as you saw in the chart that we looked at a little bit ago. And we think that that will have economic impacts on cities. We're hearing that in some cases already. And we know that property taxpayers will have to shoulder the burden of fixing or rebuilding city street infrastructure. So wrapping up, I wanted to tell you about some of the priorities that the League's Board of Directors has approved. They are very serious about trying to secure passage of a dedicated revenue source for the non-MSA city streets. It's needed in cities of all sizes, even those cities that are over 5,000 population. They're not spending enough right now on their non-MSA streets to keep up. We also would appreciate your consideration of dealing with the cost participation issue. We talked about earlier when a county or state road goes through a city and they do major reconstruction or improvements to it, the city is on the hook for cost participation. And as an example, the city of Minnetonka came before a committee that was convened this summer to talk about this. And they spent their state aid, their municipal state aid, out for 10 years just to participate in improvements to Interstate 494. So that means that none of those dollars are getting to their MSA system, and they're using other funds to take care of that. We've talked about perhaps creating a new account within the local road improvement program for this purpose. We also are we remain interested in securing authority for cities to implement street improvement districts. This is something that's been before this committee in the past, and Representative Earhart has a bill that would accomplish this. It would allow cities to create districts and then collect fees within the district for things like maintenance, construction, reconstruction. We do believe that this is something we can't do without the authority of the legislature unless we're talking about a charter city. So we would need special authority to do this, but it would be an option, a local option and a local tool that we think would help close some of the gaps. Again, it's enabling legislation, so no city would have to do it. And one of the benefits we think is that it would allow property taxpayers to pay smaller amounts over a longer period of time instead of having the big sting of a special assessment. And I'll conclude there by again thanking you for listening today, and we hope to be a resource to you as you consider putting together a transportation bill in this legislative session. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Finn. Just a couple of questions. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Ms. Finn, for being here. Just a couple of related questions. Do you have any figures on, say, what percent of general fund budgets, city general fund budgets, is being spent annually on roads?
Ms. Finn.
We do. Let me go back to that slide. We have some information, Mr. Chair and Representative Runbeck, from the State Auditor's Office. And this is that slide. So in 2014, cities budgeted $499 million for this purpose. And I forgot to change the number on the second bullet point. That's actually a 2014 number as well, that they spent $171.5
million. So, okay.
And these are two different pots of money as they're documented in the state auditor's reports.
Okay. And Mr. Chair and Ms. Finn, do you have an idea how many cities have, say, these 20 or 30-year capital improvement plans for their streets so that it's kind of planned out as to the repair and replacement? Is that common? Because it seems to me those cities that do, you know, have made it a priority to fund their streets.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, I don't have the number of cities that have these plans, but it is not atypical for a city to have that plan. You know, it somewhat depends on how sophisticated the city operation is and whether they have an engineer on staff, but they certainly are aware that this is an ongoing expense that they need to plan for.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you very much.
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Finn, my question comes to the discussion about special assessments. There's a misconception out there that I believe that many cities believe they cannot bond if they don't special assess a certain amount back to the homeowner. I know there's another way. Can you expound on that and kind of explain how that other way works, that they can bond without special assessing?
Ms. Finn.
Mr. Chair and Representative Howe, I'll have to get back to you on that. I don't know the law as it pertains to that, but we have a lot of good information at the league that I'd be happy to share with you.
Thank you. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question would be for either testifier, as a matter of fact, and that would be, after having listened to both presentations, I am very happy to see that there is a focus on roads and bridges in both. But then what I'm seeing here is, with that focus in terms of priority, the focus in terms of revenue has been requests for the legislature for either more taxing authority or more funding, etc. I am wondering if you have a list that you would be willing to share that would be mandates that have come from the legislature over the years that have created inefficiencies or, you know, spending priorities that, rather than asking for more funds, could you have a list of things that you'd like to have us repeal that would free up the inefficient spending of dollars per mandates from the legislature and allow you to use those dollars in a more efficient manner on roads and bridges?
Mr. Chair and Representative, we do have a list, and we have not had much success in getting mandates repealed. I think we've had sessions where we've started with a bill that was dozens of pages long and ended up with an amendment that was one sentence long. So we know that each of these mandates has a constituency, but we're certainly willing to take a run at it again. The one I would point out for purposes of this committee is this cost participation with MnDOT projects can be very onerous. And there are examples everywhere where suddenly the city becomes aware of a project in the queue. They want that project to happen for the region. They want to be good partners, and but it comes at a price, and it can be in the millions of dollars, and it diverts money off the system that they're responsible for.
Just a quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And the list I'm asking for specifically, I'm happy to hear that there is one. And I'm not looking for just list of mandates that are transportation related. So I would ask you to provide that list to the committee, but the list may be all beyond the purview of roads and bridges mandates or transportation mandates. So I would request that you send a list just to me personally of those that would be suggestions for repealing some mandates. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you. And a final question from Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I never know how to ask for the question without my back to her with the microphone. Just following up on Representative Runbeck's point, the thing that I always struggle with about the whole issue of local roads and bridges is what the local effort has been. And I always worry, you know, are the responsible cities already doing it and they've had a 20-year plan or something, and that it's perhaps the irresponsible city that doesn't have a plan or hasn't thought about how they develop or make decisions about local roads and bridges. So, so I don't know if the testifier can help with that. When we help local governments with local roads and bridges, how are we sure we're being fair and not rewarding those who haven't had the long-range plan?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, first of all, I don't mind that you had to turn around because I have teenagers in my house, and so I'm used to talking to people's backs. In any case, that's a fair question, and I think that there are certainly disparities between cities with how well they've really been stewards of these assets. One thing that we have talked about is giving cities more guidance when it comes to pavement management, because when you have councils turning over, you may have staff coming in and turning over. Sometimes it's hard to follow through on the even the best laid plans. There are always surprises with other infrastructure needs that come up and divert funds away from, you know, projects that had savings there. So I think it's a fair question, though, and we'd like to be a resource for cities on that front.
And Representative Nash, I apologize. I did not see your name on the list, but you have the final question.
Mr. Chair, I won't be hurt. Thank you, though. Ms. Finn, thanks for being here. And you may remember I was the mayor of Waconia for many years. A couple questions. I wanted to do a phone a friend for Representative Howe, I believe.
Okay.
There are two ways to build roads. You can either use a GO bond, which really seriously encumbers the cities, or you can use the 429 special assessment bonds, which does require that you prove benefit, but only 20% of the total amount of the cost of the road is being assessed back to the individual homeowner. And I did want to point out that the special assessments at the discretion of the council actually can be spread over a longer period of time, which is at the discretion of the council since they are the ones that, that have the fiduciary responsibility. And Mr. Chair, in the interest of time, I just wanted to clear those up. I'll save my questions for another time, but did want to point out a couple of phone-a-friend things here. That it is the 429s are a little contentious, but they are actually very fair. And at the City of Waconia, we actually went through the exercise of looking for different methodologies to try to come up with a more fair way. We had a council member that wanted to explore that. And to date, there are none. And the 429 special assessment bond is extremely fair after we looked at it from a lot of different directions. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Mr. Finn.
Thank you, Ipsum Nest.
Thank you, Ms. Finn.
Mr. Sulem from Associate of Townships, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the committee record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Sulem, General Counsel and Director of Governmental Relations for the Minnesota Association of Townships. Thank you for some time this afternoon to highlight the town the township part in this battle as we try to find a good collaborative way through for sustainable long-term funding of roads and bridges. MATH is a voluntary membership association like our colleagues. We currently represent 1,751 of the 1,753 townships. I keep trying to get those last two, but there's about seven people combined, and it's a little hard to get the revenues. More importantly for this committee, we represent 56,000 miles of official road in rounded numbers. 56,000 miles of official road. Now, why do I say official road? That's the road that, those are the types of roads eligible for the Highway User Trust Fund, the 5% set aside that literally trickles down to us. And we'll talk about the importance of the term trickle in a few moments. We have additional roads that are minimum maintenance roads or seasonal roads that are not open 8 months or more out of the year and therefore are not eligible for state funding, but they do have to be maintained at local expense. By far and away, local maintenance on road and bridges is our number one expenditure. In 2013, the state audited numbers for 2013, the most recent ones available, 58.2% of township budget statewide went for road maintenance. That equaled $155.6 million for local road maintenance, of which only 20 was deemed to have been for capital outlay. By capital outlay, the state auditor looks at that as being new road construction or equipment purchase. And I dare say that of that $20 million, I bet 18 of it was probably for new equipment, and you probably meant somebody else's used equipment, being as frugal as our folks are, but it was most likely purchase of equipment rather than actual new road miles being built. The number of road miles do fluctuate even within a year due to turnbacks from the county, annexations by a city, new subdivision dedicating a road to the township, the township accepting it, or road closures by roads that are deemed unnecessary and trying to save some public dollars. So it does fluctuate, but we're approximately 56,000 miles. We're also 6,000 of the 9,000 bridges, or I'm sorry, 6,000 of the 13,000 bridges in the state. So just under half. We're by far and away the number one road authority, and we have just under half of the state bridges. 400 and some of those bridges are currently in the state's deficiency list, meaning that within the next 5 years, something needs to be done or they're going to be in critical condition. We've got very well, and that number for the first time last year started to raise again. We've been making progress through, I think, a term most feel like efficiencies. And what I mean by that is many years ago, we were able to get the law changed to recognize box culverts as long as they get 10 feet in span to qualify as a bridge. And so we can do a lot of pre-engineered concrete box culverts that are stronger than our existing wood bridges, have a better life expectancy, and a fraction of the price of a traditional span bridge. And so we are saving a great deal of money by trying to replace a lot of the span bridges with double box culverts. Once it gets beyond that, then span bridges tend to be cheaper again, but a lot of our bridges can be dealt with that way. And we're making great progress getting bridges off the deficiency list. However, purchasing power and such, last year we started adding more per year than we were able to take off. So we had net losses, if you will, or net numbers added to that deficiency list. Funding for those roads is by far and away property tax driven. Again, if you look at the 2013 State Auditor's Report, 76.4%, more than three-quarters of our expenditures are paid for by property tax, 76.4%. State aid, which would include the Township Aid and the Highway User Trust Fund, is second at 12.3%. So we are very heavily property tax dependent. If you think back, in the year 2000, we were 50-50, 50% property tax dependent, 50% other revenues. And I think those of you with rural experience can vouch for me that a 76% property tax dependency is not sustainable long-term in rural Minnesota. We've got to find a way to get some more user fees, some more impact-driven funding in there, because the property tax simply will not be able to keep up when we're at 76.4% and growing. And that actually, if you were to reflect the real-time dollars, shows that townships have saved about 11.4% over the last 10 years. They've found ways to try to trim back their budgets by 11.4% in real dollars when you adjust for inflation. I want to again talk a little bit about the bridge side of things and the roads combined. Our roads are by far and away gravel, and they are at statutory default 9-ton standard, 5-ton during spring weight restrictions. The bridges by default are also the 9-ton, although many end up having to be posted down because they are simply structurally deficient and cannot hold a load. All that posting expense adds to our total expenditures and the need for the property taxes to be increased. It also reflects that in addition to being structurally deficient, a number of our bridges are what we're referring to as functionally deficient, particularly in the areas with very large ag operations. Today's equipment is simply larger than can fit across the bridge. They can't get the equipment from one end of the farm to the other without taking down the safety rails and other devices, which then render the bridge that much more dangerous to the next driver. So you're driving heavier and heavier equipment across older and older bridges and having to take down the safety equipment that's there in order to get them to fit. And, of course, in my opinion, we are very strong supporters of the Corridors for Commerce program. We think that's an excellent idea. However, I think you would also agree there is no Corridors of Commerce without the commerce to begin with, without the raw product. You've got to get that raw product off the farm, whether it be timber, whether it be crop, whether it be livestock. You can't have any of it without getting it off the farm. And too often we focus on the paved roads and the studies and the impact of pavement and forget the fact that those heavier and heavier vehicles, maybe they're not legal on gravel, but they have no choice but to be there. There's no other place for them to go because they've got to get off the farm to that state county highway system. And so we see a tremendous impact with very little of the benefit coming from any permit fees or anything else dealing with the overweight permits and heavy vehicles that we heard last week. Therefore, because we don't benefit from other sources of funding, and frankly, there's a lot of the local funding that you heard worked very well for counties and cities are not practical at the town level. Local option sales tax wouldn't generate much in a township because we don't have retail. And to the extent that we would have retail, that property was probably annexed into the city as a commercial operation and not rural and ag. And so we don't have those kind of options. We could probably talk to the county about doubling the wheelage tax, trying to share in that, but that's no better than a property tax because that's just taxing yourself anyhow, and so we'll keep it at the property tax. It's important to know that our folks are required every year to give a report of their road maintenance efforts at the annual meeting, along with a projection of the need and desired outcomes for the upcoming year, so that when the voters approve the levy, they know what they're approving. And part of the levy has to be dedicated for road and bridges. That's a conscious decision made by the residents of the township. So because of all those, the need that's there and our lack of ability to have other funding mechanisms, we very strongly advocate for a comprehensive, sustainable, dedicated form of revenue for our roads and bridges. And for us, that right now does mean the controversial gas tax, wholesale tax, whatever excise tax language we put on it, because that is what's constitutionally dedicated. We appreciate the efforts to look at some alternatives, and maybe there are some ways of creating other pools of money with dedicating other sales taxes, but those would be statutory dedications subject to change by any future legislature and subject to future unfortunate state deficits that may occur. We're at a time of robust economy, and that's great, and anything we can do to give a shot in the arm to the road and bridges, we would support. But long term, we've got to find a way that is sustainable, increased, and takes it off the load of the property tax. And with that, I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Soon. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would you say again how you get distribution through the formula? That comes to the county, and then they give you some out of the...
Mr. Sulem. Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, we're part of the 5% set-asides. When you look at how the Highway User Trust Fund is set up, there's 5% set-aside, and of which, and I'm sorry I don't have the spreadsheet in front of me, but there's a breakdown of that of 42.7% for roads, 39.7% to bridges, and the rest to the turnback account being used by states and counties to get the roads ready before they literally are eventually turned back to us. The statute does now allow counties to turn back roads that are not built up to proper standards. They can't turn their garbage to us. That was recognized as a fairness issue. But when county roads drop below a certain traffic volume, it's deemed to be better to be local roads. So they repair them and then turn them over to us for long-term maintenance and expense.
Thank you.
Any other questions from members? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we've heard a couple of times today, probably more than once, about a dedicated funding source. And in regards to townships and counties and even municipalities, my understanding was that the property taxes was that dedicated source, and that the other funds that are coming are really designed to help supplement the need for what's there. Am I correct in that assumption?
Mr. Sulem.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg. What you have to look at is, the answer is the lawyer's favorite answer, it depends. at the city level and county level, most of that property tax is just going to their general fund, and then they budget out for where it goes. The township, we are required to actually have a levy for roads and bridges. Now, the rest of it goes in the general fund, and certainly we can use general fund for roads and bridges, but we are required to earmark a specific percent of our, that percent is up to the voters. I mean, the voters decide what's going to be the levy for roads and bridges. But the we are required to earmark in the budget process or in the levy process that levy is for road and bridges, which then also dedicates it. However, the other dedication is the Highway User Trust Fund through the constitutional dedication. So they are both dedicated at that point.
Representative Petersburg.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So it sounds like the voters already have kind of a say in the local roads and bridges, at least through the townships, and maybe even indirectly through counties and state aid as well. So it sounds to me like we're trying to usurp kind of their authority and their responsibility as well. And so it seems kind of a point to ponder anyway. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sloan.
If I may, I understand what you're saying, but again, I point to the fact that, you know, by default, we're at property tax. I mean, there's just nothing else there once you remove that Highway User Trust Fund and the small amount of general state aid that we receive. And so, yes, the voters have a say, but it's at more of a default and an imposing burden that's just not sustainable. I think if you were to look at if you remember, I said only about $20 million went for capital outlay, and most of that would be for equipment, not for new road. At the township level, you're talking basic maintenance. You're not talking major improvements. You're not talking making those bridges functionally proper for the equipment using it. It is a break-even point of basic grading, snow removal, and not what the true need is going forward without burdening the property tax.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. The roads just didn't appear over this year. The roads have always been there. And to say that all of a sudden now we aren't able to handle it with local property taxes or whatever just is kind of almost disingenuous to say that. So what did we do 10 years ago and 15 years ago and 20 years ago? We still have the roads that are there, and it's primarily to the benefit of the people living around that area. And so if they're not willing to pay for the roads and bridges, what you're doing is asking for the money to come out of bigger pockets, and I'm just not sure that that's the proper way to go about it.
Again, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sloan.
Again, I'd say, yes, the roads have been there, and in fact, that's part of the problem for us. A lot of our roads have always been there. They're converted horse paths. They're not engineered. They're not designed. They're presumed to be 9-ton because that's what the statute says they are. And that was just a legislative decision based off some MnDOT efforts in the past to try to create uniformity, not based on actual engineering. What do we do in the past? Well, costs used to be a lot less. Gravel has gone up some sevenfold in the last couple of years alone. We had a lot more state aid at that time, so it was 50-50 expenditures. I said in 2000 we were 50-50. Those aids have disappeared. The cost has skyrocketed with things that we don't control, and therefore we are at the unbalance and in need of restoration of some balance. And I'd also point out at the town level, a lot of those roads are not just local roads. They are, in fact, the access to the seasonal rec cabins. They are, in fact, the access to WMAs and hunting properties and fishing lakes, all of which probably see far more use, and on weekends, more abuse from some ATV riders, and again, minority, not the majority of users, but coming up and using our roads for recreational purposes, and then we're left with a mess to clean up.
Representative Mason, one last question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Basically, I have two questions. I would just like to ask you to expound a little bit on your statement about the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund being used for non-highway purposes. If you can cite some specific examples, that would be helpful. And then along the same line, you had mentioned it's burdensome to be involved with the Safe Streets policy. So again, if you could give me some examples, please.
Mr.
Chair, Representative Mason, I think there may be a misunderstanding. Highway User Trust Fund is
you're
what
right.
we have
I'm
to
sorry.
Use. That is dedicated use.
Okay.
This my comment on Safe Streets, or was more had to do with the bridges, that we, because they're functionally obsolete, we're finding that people are removing the safety rails in order to get their vehicles across the bridge. They need the extra width on their wingspan of the farm equipment, so they take the rails down, and then that leaves that bridge more vulnerable and less safe for the rest of the public.
Thank you, Mr. Sulem, and thank you for being here in front of the committee. Committee members, we do need to move on to our bills today, and I would ask Representative Fabian to come down to the testifier stand. Welcome, Representative Fabian. You have House File 307, and I will move House File 307. I believe it needs to be referred to the Committee on Civil Law. Is that correct?
That's right, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian, you also have two amendments. Members, you are getting these passed out. They were sent to both research staffs prior. We just did not get them copied, so that's why we're delivering the copies here to you. Representative Fabian, would you like to speak to your amendments?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
First of all, I'll move the A1 amendment. Why don't you speak to that, please?
The amendments are really quite simple with regards to what we're trying to do here. The A1 amendment simply inserts the letter A on line 1.4, and then on 1.18, B, it says if a person uses electronic device to display proof of insurance, a peace officer is immune from liability for any damage to the device unless the peace officer does not exercise due care in handling the device. The amendments are still being handed out, Mr. Chair. What it does is it's taking any liability away from the peace officer. If a person chooses to use an electronic device as their format for having proof of insurance, they accept the liability that might be involved in if an officer were to accidentally drop it or something like that, do some damage to it. And then, of course, if there was a case of not using due care and handling of it, that would be another situation. But that would be the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
All right.
I'd like to move that.
Members, I'll move the A1 amendment. Any other discussion on the A1 amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A1 amendment is approved. And I'll also move the A2 amendment then. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the A2 simply states that the use of an electronic device to display a proof of insurance does not constitute consent for a peace officer to assess other contents of the electronic device. It's just giving privacy to the other contents of the device. They couldn't use it to do some sort of further investigation into, what might be going on. So those are the two amendments, Mr. Chair.
All right, Representative Fabian, I will move the A2 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. That amendment is approved. Representative Fabian, now to your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, first of all, I'm not, I am electronically challenged, I'll say. I'm not very geeky when it comes to this stuff. So, in fact, I had my legislative assistant helping me with some technology in my office today that was really quite simple, but that's okay. This came to me, this idea came to me from a person who had been stopped for a minor violation, a traffic violation, seat belt or speed or something like that. And when the officer asked for proof of insurance, the person had downloaded an app from their insurance company on their smartphone, and the officer said, well, you know, that's not good enough, I'm not going to take that. So you wind up getting cited for not having proof of insurance. Then go to the courthouse and have to go through that process there to make sure that that the court knew that the person did have insurance. So simply what this is saying, along with there's 34 other states that do expressly allow. So what we're doing with the bill on page 1 on lines 1.13 and 1.14 is we are expressly allowing for the proof of insurance to be in electronic format, whether it's on your smartphone, might be on your iPad. Who knows what we're going to have for electronic devices 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years from now. Like I said, 34 states do allow for this. I believe that many, many insurance companies, I heard earlier today that the top 10 insurance providers do encourage their policyholders to download their apps and so forth. So to me, it just seems to be a common sense solution to a problem that may arise. You know, for me personally, I don't know that I would download an app. I may have done that in the past, I'm not sure. But I could see, now come on, Representative Atkins, don't be laughing at me. I could see myself snapping a picture of my little proof of insurance card and having it in my phone. So in case, you know, you spill your Coca-Cola on it or something, or the dog eats it, or one of the grandchildren throws it out the window, you do have some sort of proof of insurance, and you don't have to go through the hassle of going to the courthouse to get it straightened out. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you,
Representative. Stand for questions.
Representative Fabian, any questions for members? All right. Then I will renew my motion that House File 307, as amended, be recommended pass and re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion is approved. Thank you, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Representative Swedzinski. Welcome to the committee. And House File 122, I will move that House File 122 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative Swedzinski. Two-year bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to bring House File 122 before you today. House File 122 expands the existing motor vehicle sales tax exemption for town purchases, which would be townships, to cities and counties. This includes primarily road maintenance vehicles, so snow plows, dump trucks, vehicles made for the express purposes of repairing our roads and maintaining our roads across the state. This bill does not include other types of vehicles such as cars and trucks. They are still subject to this tax. This bill is kind of just tries to create uniformity among most when it comes to road maintenance vehicles, and I'd appreciate your support. I have Laura Ziegler with the League of Minnesota Cities to testify on behalf of this bill. I also have Ben Martig with the City of Marshall.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Laura Ziegler with the League of Minnesota Cities. Representative Swedzinski laid out the bill very well, so I won't take up too much of your time. We just want to thank him for his support with this bill and for authoring House File 122. It is an important policy issue for the League to bring cities and counties in line with the exemption that's already afforded to townships. So with that, I'd just like to quickly turn it over to Ben Martig from Marshall. He also serves as our Legislative Policy Committee Chair that this issue has gone through and discussed by our membership.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman Kelly and committee members. Ben Martig, City Administrator of Marshall, about a 3-hour drive time southwest of here in Minnesota. This is an important bill for the city of Marshall. Do have a little handout there for you, kind of showing the dump truck, a classic workhorse for street maintenance across the state of Minnesota. And so it's one of those spot the difference games on the images from one to the other, and I'll kind of just jump right to the relevant difference, and that's the city logo on the side of the truck. The same piece of equipment that would be purchased by a township for a city is going to cost $9,800 more in the motor vehicle taxes, and so we're really looking at this as an equity fairness issue amongst local governments, and so looking for your support there. Crossing over to the magical boundary of the city corporate limits, looking that, you know, we really should have an equal playing field for townships as well as cities. We face the same issues. 75% of the roads in Marshall are city roads. Our daytime population nearly doubles, so we certainly have a large responsibility of maintenance. We're looking to spend about $500,000 on related equipment that would fall under this category over the next 2 years, which translates to about $30,000. So it's not going to solve all of our problems, but it's a step in the right directions. And again, we think this would really be the fair and right thing to do as well, and help us spread our dollar further on maintenance and repair of roads that, that these trucks are taking care of. Thank you.
Any questions from members? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Swedzinski, there's not a fiscal note with this?
Yes.
Representative Swedzinski, but Representative Johnson, there is a fiscal note. It is included in your packet.
And so how much would this cost?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, the fiscal note is prepared by Department of Revenue. Shows zero administrative cost to the Department of Revenue. However, there would be a cost to the highway tax or highway user tax distribution fund, because this would essentially create a tax expenditure that local units of government would not be paying the motor vehicle sales tax. Unfortunately, the Department of Revenue has a policy that they do not provide revenue notes to finance committees until it has a hearing in the taxes committee. So at this time, we do not have the numbers.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just the frustration I have. You know, we had a couple of bills go through a couple of weeks ago that, boy, it'd be nice to know what this costs. And I assume when Representative Swedzinski, you'd like to know what it costs as well. So I wish that could be rectified, but maybe it can't. So thank you very much.
Sure, your frustration. Representative
Marcy. I was going to make the same point, Mr. Chair. I mean, this is not an issue for the legislative branch. And, you know, it's difficult when, you know, we are a finance committee and, you know, this has fiscal impact, but then we won't know what it is. And so, you know, we can only guess. And I just wanted to also weigh in on that problem that we're having. And, you know, we just, this is now the, I think the third or fourth bill that has had some, you know, potentially sizable fiscal impact that we have no idea. So, again, not our issue. It's the executive branch policy here that we have to deal with, but it's concerning to me.
Thank you. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Taking a look at the one picture that you circulated here with probably a $75,000 truck, and it's probably got another $40,000 worth of equipment on it. Does this exemption apply just to the vehicles or the equipment that's, let's say, fitted on the vehicles afterward? Snow plows, boxes, ambulance boxes or ambulance equipment that's added on afterward. That would affect your bottom line as well on the fiscal note.
Mr. Swedzinski.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think I know the answer to this, but as any good representative would do, I'd like to defer to Pat Dalton on that question.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Pat Dalton with House Research. The motor vehicle sales tax only applies to the motor vehicle. The exemption, the equipment that might get attached to it would be subject to the sales tax, and it's already exempt under an exemption that was passed for local governments in 2013.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton. Any other questions from members?
Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just kind of go a little deeper into the policy standpoint. So if a vehicle like this is a trade-in vehicle, so say a city of Marshall or a smaller city would trade in on a vehicle like this, it would, as long as the vehicle they trade in is currently taxable under this, then it would buy down that taxable amount. If they would, say, trade in a different style of vehicle, so like maybe a road grader for a snowplow, then that would not count against, only if the vehicle that's traded in is paying the tax. So to kind of give you a little bit more information. And just from a, you know, the previous slide there, the 9% that goes to municipal state aid roads, cities under 5,000 do not receive those dollars, yet they are still making purchases underneath this tax. And so there is a little bit of that, you know, if you look at a vast majority of our rural cities that are currently paying the tax but not necessarily receiving money back from it, there's a little bit of a little more consciousness to that. So appreciate your time, committee.
Thank you. And I will renew my motion that House File 122 be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. That motion prevails. Thank you. Representative Joskowski.
Is that a change? You used to get a fiscal note. You used to get a fiscal note in the Finance Committee before?
I thought so.
And members, as Representative Joskowski speaks to his bill, I will let you know that we are going to lay this bill over. Representative Joskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Before you is House File 756. This bill is the intent of this bill is to move control of a parcel of just under 1 acre of land at the city of Elgin along Highway 42 to the city or a developer down the road so that they can use it for economic development in the city. The original way the bill was written was to sell the land. We have since learned that the state does not own the land, but instead holds an easement on the property. And since this hearing was scheduled, we actually have had discussion with the department, and the department and the city are going to be talking about working out the easement so that they can do a land swap, if you will, and allow the department to have an easement on different property in or near the city limits as well. But with me, Mr. Chair, if you could present briefly, is Chris Dull, who handles the economic development functions for the city of Elgin.
Dull, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Christopher Dull. I am the acting director of economic development for Elgin. My employer is actually Community and Economic Development Associates out of Chatfield, Minnesota. I'm contracted through them to act as the director for Elgin. Mainly what we want to do, we have a lot of complaints from residents in our city about driving into town from the north on either Highway 25 or Highway 42. With these concerns, people feel that the current land use doesn't represent our city very well. As you come in from the south, you have a nice business park off to the east. Coming in from the north, you see MnDOT land using or being used as a dumping ground, basically, is what it comes down to for rock, leaves, grass, whatever it may be that they use for their highway department. It just doesn't look good, in our opinion. So we would love to discuss this further with them and hopefully find a solution that would allow them to still be in town and where they need to be, but preferably not on that parcel that they are currently on. It just, we feel it misrepresents our city. So if there are any questions for me, I'd be more than happy to answer those for you.
Any questions for members? Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify on this bill? Yes, sir. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the committee record.
Good afternoon. My name is Brian Dodds. I'm the Director of Land Management for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And just want to, we are looking forward to working with the city on this up until the day when we've been opposing this bill. We do use this site actively, and so we're opposing the sale of this for economic development purposes, this easement that we acquired to reconstruct, improve and maintain the trunk highway. So we received requests from the city this last year We receive a lot of these requests, and we routinely investigate them and see if we can convey the property that is requested for sale. We talked to our maintenance staff, and they discussed a number of reasons why they opposed the sale, as they do actively use it. Just a side note, we did just finish our 2015 potential right-of-way conveyance report for the legislature. It talks about how we're proactively looking at selling surplus property. It's no longer an afterthought. We're putting it as part of our business and dedicating resources to do so. And we did evaluate this this site as part of the process. We use this for staging tree and brush removal, snow storage and melting, staging for pavement and shouldering work. Basically, it's a very convenient, has really good access for a highway. And where there's also a bridge replacement project that's just south of this on Highway 42 that could use this for staging, as well as the realignment of County Road 25 in the city of Elgin at this very intersection that could probably use this property. So we have four truck stations that are in proximity from 19, 20, 20, and 25 miles away. So this is a great spot. It's convenient for us to be staging our operations, a very cost-effective way to do business. So if we can find a replacement site that could do the same functionality, we would definitely be willing to work with the city on that.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The economic development director, I mean, I think to summarize, one of his points was that this is kind of an eyesore. Is there a way to improve the appearance of this? I'm trying to envision what it looks like, and, as an interim solution, is there anything you can do on that?
I do have some pictures if you would be interested. I could pass around.
I'm just imagining the site, so the pictures would be helpful.
Sure.
But is there something you can do to...
We would be Mr. happy Dutt. To do some... Thank you, Mr. Chair. We would be happy to do some aesthetic treatments, coniferous planting, or some other screening, if that would make the city be satisfied.
Mr. Dodd, certainly from our standpoint, it'd be best if you were able to work that out between the city and the department. Then you wouldn't have to be here. So we would appreciate those efforts. Representative Drazkowski.
And if I could add, Mr. Chair, I talked to the district director down there, and there's a very very strong desire to make that work. I'm rather certain that something will work out here, but it'll be good to have this bill laid over in case we need to come back and touch on it later.
Right, and I will... lay this, which is House File 756, over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Green. Representative Green, House File 824. I will move and recommend that House File 824 be passed and be referred to the Committee on Environment. Representative Green, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 824 is a relatively simple bill. It simply frees up some of the regulations to the local road authorities, and it will allow them to do some maintenance, culvert replacements, and improvements on their roads without seeking permit approval.
And Mr. Sulem?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, Ken Sulem with the Minnesota Association of Townships. Representative Green actually brought this bill to us, asking if this is something that may be of assistance in terms of some of the mandates and costs that are out there. And we said absolutely it's something that is an issue that we hear about from our folks. How can we streamline permitting? Are all permits absolutely necessary if all we're doing is putting the same culvert in that's actually functional, not enlarging or changing the culvert? We're just putting it back to what was intended to have been there all along. Are all these permits absolutely necessary? And so we appreciate that Representative Green has taken this effort to get the ball rolling and re-examining the purpose for various permits and which ones may be able to roll back and save us some of the expenses so we can further maximize the limited dollars for roads and bridges.
Thank you. Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a little question about this. So this bill... we talk about maintenance, including culvert restoration. So what other type of maintenance on the roads would be not subject to any permitting?
Well,
Green.
excuse me, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Uglum. There's a lot of different things that you do on the roads, but most of it is not crucial. We're not rebuilding too many roads out in the rural areas, but if there's washouts on the ditch sides, sometimes we have washouts where there is no culverts. Depending on where our roads go, there's a lot of wetlands out there, and a lot of roads that are marginal at best, but they are our roads. And the township authority and the county are responsible for the safety of those roads, and so the repairs are crucial. Whether they have to go through the permitting process or not, the repairs will have to be made. So this is just reducing a step. It's trying to slim down the process that to stretch out very limited dollars.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A little follow up, and then with regard to improvements. So we're not substantially altering the roads, but when you talk about improvements, could you expand on that a little bit too, Representative Green?
The improvements goes along with what we were just talking, excuse me, Mr. Chair, Representative Uglum. It goes along exactly with what we were just talking about. It's whether there's a washout and it needs to be fixed, or if we see a potential problem and there needs to be riprap in certain places. It's something that hopefully would be preventive maintenance on roads that probably have been repaired in the past.
Thank you. Just to follow up then, well, in terms of improvements, sometimes I look at, widening of the road or taking a couple of curves out of the road and things like that. Is that the intent of the bill, or just like you say, with riprap and other things as improvements go?
Mr. Chair, Representative Uglum, what you're talking about happens very seldom in the rural areas, but if it needs to be for public safety and that would be determined, then I believe this bill would address that too.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Sundin. Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, is there anyone from the DNR or the regulatory agency involved?
Yep.
Here?
Okay. Why don't we do that at this time? Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the committee record.
Thank you. I'm Julie Eckman. I manage our Conservation Assistance and Regulations section at the Department of Natural Resources in the Division of Ecological and Water Resources. I'm here to speak in opposition to this bill. The purpose of our public waters permitting program is to provide for a consistent and an orderly review of projects that are going to impact the water resources of the state. And through this process, the department ensures that they're consistent with the goals of other applicable federal, state, and local environmental quality programs and policies, such as the shoreland program, the floodplain management program, and also with recreational use and boat and water safety and water quality management. If this bill were to succeed, the lack of permitting would remove consistent design and guidance and oversight of projects and what those impacts are to public waters. The consequences of foregoing hydrologic review that the department provides, those consequences would be borne by the local units of government in several different ways. There's a potential for road failure during storm events, blocking fish migration and adversely impacting spawning success, could raise flood elevations of upstream areas, and lowering water elevations of upstream lakes and wetlands and basins, and unregulated crossings could also adversely impact recreational boating. We're also concerned about habitat fragmentation due to improperly designed crossings. So permits for this kind of work, they're required from everybody. That includes state agencies like MnDOT, cities, and this provides for equity and fairness for using our water resources. And we do at the DNR, we provide the best available information to inform our permit decisions so that both people and the environment are protected. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Evan, it's my understanding that there is already some kind of an expedited process. Is that correct or no for this type of permit?
Mr. Chair and Representative. We do have what we call a general permit for several counties, and all this would require then is a notification, and as long as a proposed project meets the specifications in that general permit, then the permit is already issued and the notification is approved.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, do they have to pay the $100 every time? In other words, if they replace a same-size culvert, they don't have to pay the $100?
Ms. Ekman.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara. There is a $100 fee for a township to apply for a permit, and the fee for notification under a general permit is also $100.
So, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, so this does, the township does pay $100 and just to replace the same size culvert, even if it is just the same size, no road expansion, seems like that should be covered under the general permit. And why do you have to hit them $100 for that?
Zuckman.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. The culverts that are being replaced, it's not necessarily true that they should be replaced at the same size and elevation, depending on the age of the culvert. There are things that we have learned over the past decades, years, and we want to apply those, the new information that we have, to a new project.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. But if the, and I'm sorry, I missed your name, and I should know your name. I apologize.
Julie Ekman.
Ms. Ekman, why do we feel a need if the engineering or such has said it will just be the same pipe, like maybe it has a failure and the pipe and the road is washed in away? Why, if they have a general permit that would allow them, I'd imagine, to do replace a culvert of the same size, why are we charging them $100? Why is the DNR charging for that? I think that's the basis of this bill, trying to streamline it. And you're saying you offer a general permit. I'm not sure I understand. You have a fee for the general permit, and I get if there's something changing on the road, that's a different situation. But where you're doing some really maintenance work, like just replacing a 24-inch culvert with this another 24-inch culvert of the same length, what's the need for the fee there?
A second.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the need for the fee is to cover our costs at the DNR of reviewing projects and also administrative costs of tracking and recording these activities.
Any other questions from members? Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm reading the fiscal note, and I don't know, maybe this should be a revenue estimate. Maybe Ms. Dalton can tell us more about that. But it appears to me the DNR is basically saying this is going to cost us money because we're not going to get our $30,000 a year. Is that what we're saying here, Mr. Chair?
Ms. Ekman?
Mr. Chair, Representative, what we're saying by that is that we estimate the loss of revenue to be $30,000 annually if this bill were to succeed and there were no applications required for townships or counties.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So should this bill be enacted into law, would you then find the agency would get rid of a half an FTE, or what would we do in order to make that happen?
Second.
Mr. Chair, I'm not really prepared to answer what the consequences of that would be. I can say that our public waters permitting program is currently not self-sustainable. The permit fees that come in do not currently cover the costs of the work that we do on public waters permitting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's been my experience, Mr. Chair, that when we do actually prune back some of the income of agencies through law, that we go back years later, 1 or 2 years later, and find that even though, and that's not what's represented in this fiscal note, that even though they may say that they will cut back staff in that area in order to balance things out, we go back a year or two later, and that doesn't happen. It's been my experience, but as I mentioned, that's not what we're seeing here. But thank you.
Okay. Representative, thank you, Ms. Ekman, for being here. Representative Green, any comments on your bill? Final comments.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you for hearing the bill. I think it's common sense. We are talking about transportation constantly around here, and and where we can gain extra money, but we very seldom talk about where we can trim back some of the expense, and this is a very small portion. So thank you for hearing the bill.
Thank you, Representative Green. I'll renew my motion that House File 824 be passed and re-recommended or re-referred to the Committee on Environment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
That motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Green. Ms. Donahoe, would you still like to come to the committee? And thank you for being so patient.
I do have a couple of handouts I just wanted to provide really quickly.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. We have many counties, cities, and the Township Association that are members of the Alliance. And I just wanted to follow up really briefly on Ms. Bryduck's testimony about the needs for additional funding for local governments. So what I'm giving to you is a list of projects. And we know there are many ways to quantify need, and there's been a lot of discussion about how to quantify need. So one of the really basic ways that we think is important is to look at actual road and bridge projects. So we have talked to county engineers and others. MnDOT keeps a master bridge list at the state aid office of bridges that need to be repaired in the coming years that local governments are willing to come up with the local match for. And currently we have a waiting list of bridges that are waiting for money. They could have been built last year, but we ran out of money for the local bridge program. There are many more bridges on the master bridge list, about $173 million worth of GO bond requests that we don't know if those will be fulfilled. We have bridges like the Kellogg Avenue Bridge in St. Paul, the 10th Avenue Bridge in Minneapolis that need $30 to $40 million just for those bridges alone. And as you can see on the road list, this is only 50 counties that we've heard from so far. And these are all projects that are waiting for funding that could be done in the next couple of years. And it adds up to over $1 billion worth of projects that out of 50 out of the 87 counties, we could easily come up with many more. But just to really, again, reiterate that the magnitude of this problem is very significant for local governments. And when they don't receive state funding, it is the property tax, which bears no relation to use of the transportation system, that really becomes the default for meeting these needs. So that's all I had, and thank you very much for the opportunity to just provide this information.
Thank you, Ms. Donahoe. And again, thank you for your patience. Any questions from members? All right. Members, next Wednesday, or this coming Wednesday, we'll have MnDOT in to discuss their criteria on bidding, designing, and they will be here for the whole hour. So we'll look forward to that. And with that, this meeting is adjourned. Thank